Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, June 15th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and Jim McCarty, her husband, was part of that three-person team. He was the scribe during that those channeling sessions, and much, much more. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, and chat rooms. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla and Jim a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Hey, you know, this is the first week I've gotten out and amongst the living. It's been so much fun. I've been all over the neighborhood. Melissa's kindly pushing me, and I just can't tell you what a boon it is to be out with the sun and the growing things, and they're just talking to me. And I'm singing right back. It's been wonderful.
Of course,
when Jim gets out there, he works.
She's riding her wheelchair, and I'm riding my mower. We're quite a set.
Well, you guys, I hope you don't speed and get some speeding tickets there.
I heard that on the road today. He warned me. He said he wasn't going to give me a ticket, but look out.
Are you serious? You did actually hear that today?
Yeah. Oh, the Anchorage cops are kind of friendly, you know.
I didn't even know that. I was just kidding. Wow. That's great.
Well, it was just teasing, you know.
Well, I hear you guys had a good party without me last week, so I thank Gary for filling in for me when I was out of town. So I'm glad everything went well.
It really did. I enjoyed Gary. He had a few technical errors, which made him human, and after that we got along fine.
I think we've had a few of those, haven't we?
No, we've had more than a few.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff. And this is from Session 52, Question 11. Questioner, is there, from the point of view of an individual who wishes to follow the service to others path, anything of importance other than disciplines of personality, knowledge of self, and strengthening of will? I am Ra. This is technique. This is not the heart. Let us examine the heart of evolution. Let us remember that we are all one. This is the great learning teaching. In this unity lies love. This is the great learn teaching. In this unity lies light. This is the fundamental teaching of all planes of existence in materialization. Unity, love, light, and joy. This is the heart of evolution of the spirit. The second ranking lessons are learned, taught in meditation, and in service. At some point, the mind-body-spirit complex is so smoothly activated and balanced by the central thoughts or distortions that the techniques you have mentioned become quite significant. However, the universe, its mystery unbroken, is one. Always begin and end in the Creator, not in technique.
Thank you, Monica. Every time I accept a teaching job or get to speak at a conference, I love it with all my heart, and yet I know at the same time that I'm going to be meeting all kinds of points of view and all kinds of states of mind. And I think that there's a very large percentage of the questions that I get from those who are wise rather than loving, those who think with their heads rather than their hearts, have to do with the technique. Do this for half an hour, do that for 20 minutes. I know how to make love for 6 hours. Here's the book. You know, it's all. You can get lost in the technique of anything. You can get lost in the technique of a brush stroke. I'm not sure what that's happened to a few artists. get lost in the technique of an art, and so. I know this is especially true with music when it's from the Baroque era or when it's enormously difficult to perform and a lot of mentation and body learning goes into being able to possess that, you know, under your fingers, that what you'll hear a lot of times is more of a clock ticking over kind of production where the rhythm is always absolutely perfect and the music is always accurately depicted, and it's perfect, and it is cold. It doesn't find Bach's heart. And then you hear someone else play the same thing who loves it and approaches the same with love, and you hear it completely differently. And so it is with philosophy, certainly. The great love of philosophers from eons past is to talk, and that's a good thing. You have to sit down and think and listen and communicate and talk, and certainly the school of Plato was a school that was strictly question and answer. So from 400 years before Christ, we have this tradition of getting the principles, learning the proper words to say, knowing the prayer by heart, all of the things that make it beautiful for us if we are fond of the Catholic approach to the liturgy. I'm one of them. I'm an Anglican Catholic, I guess you'd say. Have the same liturgy as the Catholics, and I think there is a lot of love in both churches, and there are a lot of people that are simply feeling very, very comfortable with being there that are actually mystics. But in truth, when you get into a person that is looking to follow the stairway to heaven, I'm yearning to, you know, the wonderful song from, what is it, the Who?
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin, excuse me, I always make that mistake. Anyway, I like Led Zeppelin, I get it wrong. Okay, anyway.
That's okay. You got the song right.
Yeah. Anyway, that song is so perfect because it is what people do, whether they're learning the prayers from the Catholic Church or the prayers to go to their, what is it in the Jewish church when you become a man or woman?
The Bat Mitzvah.
Yeah, the Bat Mitzvah or the Bar Mitzvah for guys. And you're learning all these words, and, you know, okay, that, and a dollar will get you a cup of coffee. You know, it's always important to remember that technique is basically empty without the lush vegetation of love. If we're gardens, we're gardens in desperate need of watering. And we need watering from the very best sources. And so, you know, we need to ask love to be in the water that we drink and the food that we eat, and breathe it in from what's all around us. And when we're coming from love, and somebody asked the question about technique, we have to blend those as smoothly together as possible, because they do make up one way altogether. But the question is simply, where is the balance in that? Is it technique or is it the heart, the mysticism that doesn't make much sense? I think that it's the mysticism that makes no sense, that has to begin and end. Musings of the penitent or the scholar, of the religious scholar. Because the techniques by themselves will come at some point to be lacking. Whereas the following of unity does not lack. It goes on forever. And so this is the cornerstone of our walk in a lifetime that is all too short, and much of it certainly confused. But you know, we all come up from that sea of confusion, whether it's seldom or often, and have a clear experience of love, whether it's the smile of another person on us, or the smile of the sun on our body, or just whatever we have seen that lifts us up, and all of a sudden we're dancing the dance of love. We are one with everything, and that is truth. If we can stay there, it's a marvelous thing. When I put down the disciplines of the personality, I don't put them down to nothing. I think that you do have to learn discipline. Certainly, I'm a good example of that. I can talk forever, and people might think that I'm wise, but you know, unless I'm talking about love, I don't have it down yet. So whenever we're working on the discipline of personality, the knowledge of ourselves, or the strengthening of our will, know that we're working at that in order to have our system of chakras, our energy body or our electrical body, balanced and able, empty, see, is empty when it's balanced, is able to receive from the Creator this power shot of love that engulfs you and sustains you. And when you have experienced that and have begun just beginning to work with that, you will know that, yes, all the techniques were worth it, because you had to know how to quiet your personality, how to find out who you were and fall in love with yourself, how to find your will, and then how to strengthen it and cause it to be a strong arm for you. Not in defense, not in offense, but in the sharing of your best and highest truths. So, I love the way this says, the universe, its mystery unbroken, is one. I always begin and end in the Creator, not in technique. Amen.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have our first question today from Scribe. Not Jim the Scribe, but someone going by the name Scribe on the Bring Forth forum. And Scribe says, now this is a kind of a long question, but I'm going to go ahead and read all of it to get a full understanding of what he's asking, and I did condense just a little bit of it. This is not a criticism of the law of one material. I think it is the truest feeling thing I've ever found, despite any misgivings I may have about the subject. I'm just stuck in a knot of fear and need some intellectual support, and this is the only place I know of where someone might understand what I'm talking about. A while back, I read a website by a Gnostic-leaning person who claimed that this entire universe and all its worlds, dimensions, densities, etc., are quarantined from the rest of creation because the God, or Logos, of this universe had based the creation upon the principle of consumption. And this is the only universe where consumption or eating is allowed. And as long as one keeps reincarnating here, one will never be free, even if one ascends. Advanced, higher density beings are just bigger, more powerful, and more evolved eaters. This is what came from this Gnostic website that he had found. Along the same lines, we have the Pleiadians, bringers of the dawn, claiming that our Logos created us so that it can feed off of our love, in contrast to the STS beings who feed off of our fear, claimed by the Pleiadians to be a perversion, but of course admitting any bias they may have. And lastly, there's a little fact that the fundamental focus of the Law of One message is an event called the harvest, which seems to correspond to the general New Age concept of ascension, only with more fleshed out details about who gets to ascend, why they get to ascend, and where they're ascending to. So if it's an ascension, why call it harvest, which implies gathering ripe fruit so that we can eat it? I'm sure if one is an STO being, whatever the being eaten represents will be seen as a desirable outcome, a merging of one's higher self or something along those lines, a good thing, not something to be afraid of like a mouse fears being eaten by a cat. But what if I don't want to be eaten? Do I even have a choice? Would I be better off seeking an exit from the entire eating verse and dwell among creations of an exclusively eternal nature? How can I even answer that question without knowing if I wanted to come here or if this entire universe is a trap designed to make me desire to stay in it? Ever since I started asking these questions, I can find no peace and make no spiritual progress because I'm afraid to even begin to seek out my higher self or any spiritual power that might be able to help me remember why I'm here. Because I don't know how high up the ladder the deception goes. I don't even know what the game is anymore or whose side I'm supposed to be on. This is from Scribe.
It's an interesting letter. It's obviously one that he's thought deeply about. And I think that there are two answers to this question, and let me give you both, Scribe, because I'd like to relieve your distress. And at the same time, I'd like to try to make sense out of the eating thing, eating verse. I don't think that there's any doubt that this is definitely a new universe where the eaters become the eaten in the chain of evolution. We are the first species not to get eaten, because normally with just our size and everything, we would be unable to beat a baboon or a lion or something like that. We might do it once, but we probably wouldn't do it twice. Even without that kind of threat, well, we manage handily to kill ourselves off in wars and in secret military operations pretty well. Pretty solid percentage of the world's population goes to the hereafter long before his pattern is ended because of the bullet on the other side making its mark on his forehead or his body. So we, too, are in the chain of the eaters and the eaten. We eat everything in sight. Some of us have tried to clean that up a little bit and eat better with more thought, with more care. And that usually means not eating red meat because it does so many bad things. They can be shown in blood tests, cutting down the sugar in your diet, cutting down on flour and bread products. Some people have trouble with milk. It's important not to give people like that milk unless you're giving them something to make it possible for them to eat it, all that stuff. But the basic thing about about this eating and eating thing is that we stand at the pinnacle at this moment of the eaters and the eaten. We are the eaters. We are not the eaten. We do not cringe in fear that something is going to fly down or come out of the forest or out of the river or out of the ocean to kill us. We have conquered. We are supreme. But we do exist in the chain of evolutions, eating and eaten. And he touched right on it. He said, or one of the ones touched right on it, he said that the Creator eats, where is it? Eats our love, whereas the other side eats fear. This isn't it either, though. It's close. The Creator does indeed eat everything that it can under the free will law, which means that there is a long, long time to go before we shall get eaten. And when we are eaten, we are going to be wanting to be eaten very much. The entire seventh density is called the density of forgetting, because we turn our back on all of the things that have happened in the past, such as our love of the Creator. We yearn to go to the Creator, and that yearning just gets bigger and bigger. And finally, we become pure enough light that we actually are able to join the Creator and have no more personality, because that personality has been taken up by the Creator. Scribe, it's going to happen to you millions of years from now. And meanwhile, you'll have a lot of experience in between. And I don't know, but I think if there were enough in you that did not want to go on like that, you probably wouldn't get to the end of seventh density. You'd probably get stuck in sixth density, not wanting to go on. I don't know very much about that. That's just conjecture. But I do know one thing, and that is that we are all in a universe that was begun, as the Loved One put it, because of the Creator's desire to know itself. So what the Creator is eating is our witnessing to and our emotional reactions and responses to the universe that we know and see outside. It's not anything that we would be against. It is information that we have collected, and certainly we give it to the Creator gladly. It doesn't mean that we don't have it anymore. We have it in a greater state, perhaps, because of the fact that as we consciously give it to the Creator, then, you know, we've sort of gone over the things that we have learned, and we know more than we would have otherwise. But it's basically one of those great things that really move towards paradox. Like, why in the world would we ever want to be eaten? That sounds so funny. How could we ever want to be eaten? But we are perfectly welcome. We do welcome the sharing of what we know with the Father or with the Creator or whatever you want to call it, him, her. And we do want to keep our personalities. Well, we will keep the part of our personalities that last. I mean, you might not come in next time with the need for the kind of personality that's outgoing and gregarious and, you know, glad-handing and back-slapping and just the life of the party. In your next incarnation, you and your higher self might decide, well, for this incarnation, I'm going to need those parts of my personality which were more on the muted side, on the calm side, the ability to rest and to help others to rest. Okay, that means that you take other things into the next incarnation that you need in that incarnation for your learning and for your service. And then you are developing your soul stream by working on this part of it that is you in incarnation. So, you know, you develop strands of the beautiful ribbon, woven ribbon of being, as you go through your incarnations, and that all makes for one vibration, one basic vibration. What is your vibration at this moment as you are thinking? That is what the basic test, health test, shall I say, of the universe is, according to the Confederation information. How are you vibrating today? If you're vibrating very weakly, but you have all of your chakras in balance, then you can bring great information through. And if you're strong as anything, but you've got issues in some of the lower chakras, you're not going to be able to use the higher chakras because you'll be blocked out. So it's a very crafty game. You can't judge a person by his mask. He may have a mask that he's developed. He's maybe very sophisticated in this mask, and he puts on the things that he thinks he should be. This mask is going to crumble when it gets threatened, and he'll show his true colors. What you want to do is gently lift the masks from yourself as they are able to come out, and then keep on, you know, refining yourself, knowing yourself better, and you'll see how you change. But do not fear, my dear one. Please do not fear. Let me talk about harvest versus ascension real quick. Ra talks about the harvest because it's a harvest. But the results of the harvest aren't like a human harvest where the chaff is burnt in the fire. In this harvest, those who don't make graduation are gently picked up in their third density form, and after they go through the healing of their incarnation and discussions with their higher self, they get ready for another third density incarnation somewhere else. Most of the people on this planet come from people that have done just that, have come down to Earth to try to make this harvest, make a difference before the harvest, or just be there at the harvest to lend their witness to it. So after the harvest takes place and all who can go on are cared for, then the ones that did not go on are simply gone. You know, the next step is to go through the study of the incarnation, the healing of the incarnation, and then getting together with your higher self to discuss, well, what shall my next third density incarnation be? So you see, you don't die. You move on. And it's just that where you're moving to, the light that you had in you does not hold for a light enough for fourth density. You can't use that light. So you have to stay in third density until you are able to use the light. Anybody have anything to say on this? I've really been hogging the mic.
Yeah, I'd like to approach it perhaps from a slightly different angle. All of the major religions, all the religions of the world, have been infected or, shall we say, tainted somewhat by the negatively oriented entities, whether it's Islam or Christianity or Judaism or Hinduism. There has been an attempt, and this would include the New Age movement as well, there has been an attempt by negatively oriented entities to place fear within these religions so that they can distract various seekers from their path towards love and unity with the Creator. If they can distract such entities and remove the light that they can create in their seeking, then there is darkness where there once was light, and this is a victory for the negatively oriented entities. So they count the ability to cause fear and a lack of desire to go forward into the search for light as a victory for themselves. And this is something that we need to be aware of. And I think that as you read, we read the Bible every morning, the Old and New Testament. In the Old Testament especially, there is so much negativity. There's so much of this vengeful God that will smite us if we don't do exactly what we're told. And that's the fear aspect in our religion. And in the New Age, this idea that we're going to be eaten because we're creating love and that's going to be our fate is the same sort of thing, just put in another way. As far as the harvest goes, I would say that as we approach what Carla called the seventh density and become more able to become one with the Creator, it's not so much that we lose who we are and our identity, it's that we gain so much more of a perspective when we become the Creator. It's like we trade in our 1 degree of the 360-degree circle for that 360 degrees. Now, with all those other viewpoints and all the other ways of looking at things, it might seem that you've lost something, but actually you've gained a great deal more. And it's the experience in this whole long journey that we make that is such a gift to the Creator, because it helps the Creator know who the Creator is. And it helps us know who we are as the Creator as we partake in this journey. So I don't see any reason for any kind of fear in any religion or any seeking. And whenever any person, any seeker, sees fear or something that would cause fear in his or her path, that is a hint that there has been an infection, shall we say. And you need to look past that, and you need to get to the point of view that sees that this is a loving process. This is a process of unity, and it's not anything at all to be feared.
Wow, I think between the two of you, you really, really covered all the bases there. The only thing I would add to that as an additional question is, you address what happens in seventh density. What about what happens in fourth when there's the merging of all the entities into a social memory complex? I've seen people comment on that and liken it to the Borg in Star Trek, you know, that the individuals are just assimilated into this group consciousness, and that's kind of a negative, illustration of that. Can you differentiate between what we see in sci-fi, like in Star Trek, the Borg, versus what an SMC really is?
Go ahead, Mickey, you're on a roll.
Well, the Borg have no free will. They have to do exactly as the Borg Queen says. It's a path that is absolutely rigid in its progress. I believe that when we go into fourth density and we become part of a social memory complex, it's much like what I was just describing when we become part of the Creator, just on a slightly smaller scale. However many entities that are graduated from our Earth plane, say there's 50 million, then we, each individual, has the complete memory of each of those 50 million people. It's, again, an expansion of the point of view, and we still have our own point of view, and we still have free will. We can still do what we wish. It's just that at that point, we see that the loving action, the serving action, is what we really want to do. We really want to be of service. And so it's a whole the differing point of view, I think, here is free will. There is free will in fourth density when we become part of a social memory complex, and the Borg don't have free will.
Do we have free will only within the parameters of the group consciousness of the social memory complex?
We could, if we wished, do anything that we wanted. But out of free will, we usually, this is my opinion, I could be wrong, we usually do what the entire group would wish to do, because we're able to consult them and they consult us. It's a process of being able to be in instant communication with every other entity in the social memory complex and to receive and achieve a consensus point of view, so that we become unified in our direction. We point the compass in one direction and go there willingly. Now, I believe that also there can be individual progress and individual activity, but it is also freely allowed and encouraged by the social memory complex. So it's an expansion of ability, it's an expansion of identity, an expansion of everything that we would want to do and want to be and want to serve.
Okay. My follow-up questions, by the way, are drawn from discussions I've seen on the bringforth.org forum, because this very topic has been discussed, and I remember some people speculating, well, gosh, what if I'm part of the social memory complex and I decide to leave? You know, they were wondering, can anyone ever leave a social memory complex, or are they stuck? And I get what you're saying. You're probably not going to want to. But I think they were just wondering if they would still have that freedom as an individual entity.
Sure, I believe that our freedom is expanded at that point, and we can do whatever we wish to do. But we discover that there are things that we share with others as our wishes as to what we would want to do.
Okay, all right. That makes sense to me. I'm going to move on to the next question, which is from Cyan. Cyan says, I have started to view the service to self, or STS path, as isolation, and that which seeks, excuse me, which seeks to build by removing, and STO, service to others, as community, or that which seeks to build by addition. It seems to work. Any action that adds movement, people, things, thoughts, is STO, creative or explosive. Any act that seems to remove is STS. And as all is one, it matters not which way you go, other than once you've removed enough, you will find yourself unable to add without significant work. On the course of the average day, if you actually pay attention to every single thought, you'll add tens of thousands of times and remove the same number. Harvest occurs when you add the same stimulus in your perceptive cone for long enough to believe what you see is an echo of your original thought. After that, you realize the laws of existence and you get to fourth, where the concept of addition and removal is peripheral to the real purpose of existence, and that is the motivation of how you wish to interact with the objects and people around you.
I think that's simply true. I'm not sure what I can comment on, because service to self is a very isolated choice to make. If you choose to be graduated, say fourth, if you choose to graduate into fourth density negative, you're going to have to create a world around you in third density in which there is no more than 5% of actions done for others. And it's really hard, it's harder to get to that 5%, get down to that 5% of service to others and have all of that 95% service to self than it is to reach the 50% and over, which is, you know, at least you're not making a great grade, but you've got at 50, you know, you're still in the game. And this, the when you're choosing the way of the magus, a negative magus, it's you're likely not to be able to make it in one incarnation. You're likely to have to hone your skills through a couple different incarnations. When some people choose to do this, it's a long-range goal, and many incarnations are involved. So I think that, service to self is empty because you've made yourself totally defended, and you are totally using other selves either to satisfy some need of yours or to encourage them to get out of your way. And you don't care what way that you choose to knock them out of your way. It's a great the truth of it is that it's not that difficult to knock people off the path. The question about being scared, you know, because we might lose our personalities that came earlier. That's perfectly typical of when you get a negative thought. It's like that you know, it doesn't make you totally terrified, but it distracts you with fear, with fearsome thoughts. Now, if you sit out, you're sitting on the side of the road to the kingdom, and now you're not moving anymore. You're just sitting there going, oh my heavens. What is going on? There are negative things that are happening here. How shall I, cope? And it's very rough. I mean, it's very hard to make it through the day and not be negatively oriented oneself, at least, you know, in the ebb and flow of, especially if you're on the road, you're definitely going to experience some negative emotions because there are so many drivers on the road that are very happy to give them to you. So I hope that helps, Diane. It's absolutely true. The great thing about the service to others polarity is that you have friends along the way. You have companions, and the companions that you have are the best companions in the world. And you're working for something higher than yourself. You've connected at the level of love, and now here you are. You're able to work for something greater than yourself. And something like L&L Research, that's our entire intention, is to form a focus for people, sort of like Deep Space Nine, where we're sort of out there, you know, spinning and have a bunch of stuff to read if it might help, and have a bunch of people to talk to that definitely are not going to tell you that you're crazy. They'll, you know, connect with you in your spiritual wondering and seeking, because that's what they're doing too. And, you know, we see people come and go, and that's good. That's the way it has to be. But the people that have caught that feeling of being in love with something greater than yourself and wanting to be part of a labor of love, it's really wonderful to help people find a niche for themselves and get them going. Jim, I noticed your pen moving over there. You got something to say.
No, you saw a pen moving? I think that was a cat. That was a cat moving by the table.
Oh, darn.
No, I agree with what you said, and I really don't have anything else to add to that particular point.
All right.
Okay, very good. And you are listening to In the Now with Carla L. Records and Jim McCarty, two-thirds of the original team that channeled the Law of One material, and you can check them out at llresearch.org or bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. And it's not too late to call in if you'd like to ask Carla or Jim a question, 646-595-2294. Be sure and hit the one key. That's 646-595-2294. I'm going to go on to our next question. Actually, it's not a question. It's a topic for discussion suggested by Diana. And it's got two parts, so I'm going to read the first part first. And this is regarding implications of service to others, how STO affects self, and who are the others. The foundation of the discussion, all things are connected, all things are one. This foundation brings up two perspectives within the concept of STO. One, possible imbalance in STO, in this service to others path. As all things are one, you are the other self, we may extrapolate that service to others includes service to self. If service to other selves is sacrificed to service to self, we call this STS, which would require balancing at some point, according to Ra. Similarly, service to others, STO, would at some point need balancing by the inclusion of self in the service. When focused on service to others, one often forgets the self. This indicates an open heart and compassion, yet perhaps not enough wisdom to see the whole picture. When one sacrifices the self for service to others, one is ignoring a part of creation, the self. At some point of integration of the Law of One, there may be no choosing who or what to do service for, and no act of service would be necessary, as the entire life, focus, intent, and awareness would be on the oneness of all. In both cases, STS and STO, with little or no inclusion of self, separation causes the imbalance. I'm going to go ahead and read the second part after all. It kind of flows from there. The second part is who or what to be of service to. Another example of separation is in where we choose to be of service, in where we choose to be of service. Humans choose mostly to serve humans. And yet there are many life forms right here with us, animal life, plant life, mineral life, the planet itself. We say there's not enough time to do everything, to be of service to everything. We choose what to focus our service on, rather than just be of service in every moment. Being of service every moment sounds exhausting, yet I don't think it is. In each moment, if one is connected to all things, it would not be a matter of selecting what to be of service to. Rather, one would always simply flow with the idea of being one with all things, that all life is sacred, and one would automatically choose the path of least harm to all. It might be posited that in choosing what to be of service to, one unintentionally underscores separation. This is from Diana.
I think that there has to be some separation involved in living, or we would not be able to go on. We wouldn't be able to pay our bills, raise our children, and do all those things that the culture of our time requests of us. There has to be that basic boundary that is, you know, the boundary of the body of the self, which is different than the body of other people, so that we don't become simply doormats. We have to remember that when we're serving love, usually it's uncomplicated and simple. Someone that you love needs something, and you have it, and you give it, and that's a simple, you know, equation. Other times, it's much more difficult. Other times, the situation is more complicated, has gone on for a long time. By the time someone asks you for help, you are looking for not just the truth, but you're looking for Blu-ray density truth. You're looking for truth with kindness. And I believe it's there. I believe that for every situation, you can find some way, some angle to get into that question that the person comes to you with that holds not just truth, but also a compassionate truth. And this often it means the difference between knocking down the person's ego, you know, oh, you were an idiot to think like that, here's the way you should really think. And instead, you're saying, "Well, you've thought these are good thoughts, and this is a good thought, and that's a good thought, and here is a way you might think that might appeal to you too," and you just offer it. And you know, sometimes people take that up, and sometimes they don't see it. But that's pretty much what I try to do in my counseling, is to see the person at the soul level and then try to help him or her find a way to love himself, serve himself and others, and so forth. So if the foundation of discussion is that all things are connected and all things are one, then, in a way, we're saying that the service to self aspect is based completely on an untruth, that we are not all one. That takes a very clear difference right there at the beginning of the assumption. If we say that all things are connected, the service to self doesn't work, because the service to self has separated himself from the rest of the players on the playing board. He considers everybody not as a human being, but as something he can either use or conquer or dismiss or annihilate, whichever he wants to do. And we do have people that think like that. I remember one of the people that I consider the greatest politicians of our time, and he was heard to say to someone else when he found out that someone had done something that could be interpreted as against him, he said, "Hurt him." It was very simple, and it was overheard by a writer who wrote about it in the New York Times at the time. This was way back in the day. But that's really what it is. When your service to self, you are engaged in creating a big self out of your little self and subserving into all of the aspects that you can of that person for your use. And you go, you eat up people and create in their experiences some falsity, which means that their energy is moving towards you, their power is moving towards you. And you see this clearly delineated in our corporations. Really, totally, you know, the credit goes to the highest level guy that worked on it. And when you get to be up in the high levels and you're making, you know, movie star money, and it's amazing how many people like that there are in this world that have managed to find a golden balloon to help them in their latter years. And you have the simple, obvious example of the Army, Navy, whatever, because it totally is hierarchical. And all of the glory of a battle is given to the general that commanded it, not the guys on the front lines that died. So these are two examples of the way service to self sort of eats people up with care only that he got the most out of that person. So you would say there's a possible imbalance in service to others, because service to others, it includes service to self. Now, there you get into the area of obvious nonsense. There is enough service to others and enough service to self that they will always be in the huge, larger sense of the word, of all the energies together sort of amalgamating and facing each other. There's always going to be imbalance between those two, unless exactly half the people on Earth decide to go service to self. I think that it really kills people that when you can't get out of serving yourself. It really does. It aggravates them. But I don't want to serve myself. I want to serve others. But I think you have to laugh over the folly of that. You just got to laugh at it. I mean, when you see spiritual truth, so often you are in the range of you know, the humorous, the odd, the peculiar, and the what is it, Mickey? I'm trying to say when things don't can't be assimilated as one. Anyway, you'll find that along the path. But I think it's a sophistic disassembling. I don't think that within the law of one, the concept includes a necessity for there to be a balance in service to self and service to others within the self. I don't think so. Anybody got any different ideas?
Well, just from a slightly different point of view, perhaps. As we go through our daily round of activities, there is a flow of energy that we can partake in. And if our intention and our desire is to be of service to others, then we will see the situations that come our way as opportunities to be of service. And it'll be something that we really don't have to think too much about if we have this basic intention with which we start our days. And I think that the way things work is just the universe presents us with opportunities, countless opportunities, to do what we wish to do. So as seekers of truth, we decide in our own way of seeking what it is we want to do. And then the universe presents us with ways of doing that, and it's just a kind of a natural flow that happens to us every day, and it determines what professions we choose and what direction we go during the day. Maybe quite literally whether we take a right or a left turn and who we run into and what opportunity it presents to us. So it's I think a seamless flow of opportunity that comes our way once we've made that choice of being of service.
Okay, we have just a few minutes left, and I would just, as a very quick follow-up question to that, one element in the Part B of Diana's question that kind of struck me was where she asks, humans choose mostly to serve other humans, and yet there's many other life forms right here with us. And she seems to be asking, how do we decide who or what to serve? How do we make those distinctions? At least that was kind of a question I perceived from
that. I noticed that too, and I was thinking that how quick she is, because just the other day, Winfrey, I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm on Winfrey's show on Monday night conference call at 9 o'clock California time, 6 o'clock Eastern time, the last Monday of each month. And he was talking about, I lost my train of thought, Mickey, what was?
What Winfrey was talking about on his show?
Yeah.
Angels.
He said, what do you want to talk about on the show? What do you want to talk about? And I thought, well, you know, the other gal that's a channel that's on the show, she channels angels. And so I thought, well, we haven't talked about angels. And I thought, well, you know, Terry's probably got a lot to say about that. And she's kind of shy. I wanted to encourage her speaking up. So I suggested angels. Well, he said, well, that's fine. We'll do angels. And so Terry did speak indeed very beautifully, and I talked about my experiences with angels. I talk with an angel every day, just to myself. It's not like I go around muttering. But anyway, I was troubled by Wynn's reaction to the show, which was very extremely positive. And he said, this is so great. We had finished our program that last time by sending angels to everybody that was listening. And because of the fact that both Terry and I have sent angels before, it was, you know, a powerful happening. And people wrote in roaring about how wonderful it was and how they had been able to feel the angelic energy, and they felt safe and they felt comforted, and it was so warm and wonderful. And, you know, so he said, we want to do this every time, and maybe we could do workshops on angels. So I began to be troubled by this, because it just seemed like the workshop thing seemed like a way to take money from people when you could do it for free, you know. So I lay in my bed one night when I wasn't sleeping, and I asked, I called my Holy Spirit Holly. I asked Holly what the angels wanted, and the message that came back was that the angels, there's not just personal angels, there's also archangels, and the archangels are working as hard as they can to make the water pure, to make the air pure, to make the earth pure, and Michael with his sword to make political systems and economic systems pure. That's their job. And they're doing the best they can. And how about, you know, when we go to log on for getting a personal angel, how about we click on, yes, I will pray to ask the archangels help in fighting the destruction of our land. Yes, I will work with Gabriel on the destruction of the water and how to fix that, you know. Yes, I will work with Mikael on those political and economic systems that need to be purified. And I said, you know, how about putting that just at the bottom of the screen, you know, when it has to do with going to one of these workshops, which he wanted to charge some money for, and I suppose it would certainly be worth it to people. They would enjoy it. But I said, you know, how about enlarging it so that so we could have some global concerns here in addition to just the human concern of I'm lonely, I'm isolated, come to me, you know, make me feel better, make me safe, feel safe. And that's all wonderful stuff. And I love the angels and commune with them every day. They have extremely strong powers to magnify love and water. If you're washing dishes or if you're taking a shower, ask the water that hits you to be magnetized to love. And just let it just pour all over your body. It's wonderful. But you have to ask them. You see, you can't just assume that they're doing their job. They have to be asked in order to do the job. So here these archangels are, probably hungry, very hungry, for people that just pray to them, look, yes, I'm with you. Go ahead. You know, help me to see what I can do here on earth. Help me to see what human hands can do. Because, you know, they can't reach through into the human arena and do things with their hands and feet. They've got to use humans for that. And so they need humans that can be purified to the extent that they're able to commune with the angels anyway. So I do see your point about the fact that it does seem to, you know, it seems to belittle the system that we have just so much. But I feel sure if we had the time to ask about the various things that we didn't get to ask about, the work would be much clearer. The difficulty was the way the message was collected. It was collected in question and answer form, and every day Don started with a carefully desired, oh, time to go, huh, Monica?
That's okay. It's still recording. It'll be in the archives, and that's where most people hear it anyway, so don't worry about it. Go ahead and finish your thought.
All right. What was my thought?
About how Don would ask questions.
Oh, yeah, and he started out with this very beautifully created bunch of questions, and about question three, Ra would throw in a zinger, and John would go ballistic, and he started chasing the tilt ball all over the board trying to run down Ra's thought. And so it would, you know, make U-turns and L-turns and all kinds of turns and in the material. And, you know, one question would be about something, and then Don would start getting at the what was just said in such a way that we go off on a sidekick. And then it may be, you know, a whole letter or two before Don got back to the original question. So that's why we don't have, you know, everything covered, you know, so it's not a perfect textbook. I tried to make a good textbook for the basic Law of One standards, and, you know, what goes on there. In my book, 101,
The Choice.
And I think I did a fair job of it, so take a look at that.
You did a great job. You did a great job, Carla. You did.
I appreciate that. Anyway, back to the ending of the show. I'm very sorry that I overtalked.
Oh, that's okay. Good heavens. We all got a bonus here. So, yeah, we might want to redress that a little bit next week again and kind of revisit the last part of her question perhaps. And, if there's any more discussion, Diana can let us know if she'd like to revisit that. Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and close up. Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Jim, as always. It's always wonderful to talk with you. And thank you for the honor of being able to host the show. And we want to let everyone know we will be here next week, Friday, June 22nd at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. Please visit llresearch.org, which is the archive website, and check out the Law of One material and the other channeling transcripts, interviews, and speeches, and bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org for LL Research's community website. And you can always submit questions at bringforth.org, and you can always call in as well. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great.